Hi, I'm Peter Clark. This is Inside Language with linguist Kate Burridge. Hi, Kate.
Hello, Peter.
We've got a request, our very first request for a podcast, and it comes from the editor of Inside Story, Peter Brown. So, well, we have to obey, don't we?
We have to do this.
He rang me up the other day and said, ask Kate, where does the phrase, pardon my French, come from? And I went, well, I haven't got a clue, so I'm asking you, Kate, pardon my French. But as I thought about this, there are a lot of references to French and Dutch and Greek in the English language. So, Kate, where does pardon or forgive my French come from?
Or excuse my French, yes. It's been in the language as a phrase since the mid-19th century, as a kind of a euphemism, I suppose, for bad language. It's interesting how these nationalities get used in this way. So I think all language groups will have these expressions for, you know, groups that they don't particularly like. But I think what's very interesting is when they get used as these kind of descriptive nouns. It's a more subtle kind of use, I guess. But French appears in quite a few expressions. If you think of French vice and French letters, and as one linguist once put it, French are the nation that's most closely associated with sex in the minds of the English. So you do find French in a lot of these sorts of expressions, like French letters, French pox, of course, for syphilis.
Why don't we say then, forgive my German? There are a lot of swear words that come from German. German is more closely aligned with the English language. So it's not simply about the source of a swear word, is it? It's something much broader than that.
That's right, exactly. Most of the swear words are, in fact, of English origin, so they're not pinched from German as much as they're sort of Germanic, so they're good basic, you know, Germanic stock. And using French in that way, I suppose, because French has been a deodorising language for English, in fact, it's the one that supplied all the euphemisms. So it is a kind of an ironic twist to it, I think, to that expression.
So what are people actually saying? It's normally used as fig leaf, really, a linguistic fig leaf to cover up something that you've said, and it's normally not anything very strong, but
no.
You might find someone giving a speech and go, damn, and pardon my French. But is there something deeper going on here, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, there always has been rivalry there, hasn't it?
Intense.
Yes, that's right. So you do find, well, that's why these words get used in this way. And the best example of that is the poor old Dutch that appear in so many expressions, some of them quite old. We've got Dutch courage, of course, Dutch shout, Dutch nightingale is in fact a frog.
Dutch uncle,
exactly, yes. Double Dutch. And there's that wonderful expression, you don't hear it so much now, something will happen or I'm a Dutchman, as if being a Dutchman is the worst possible thing you could be. And those expressions go back to the 17th century when, you know, the French and the Dutch were these great rivals, naval rivals. Dutch gets bandied about in that way. I don't think the Dutch have retaliated as far as I know, but I might be wrong.
Interesting, isn't it? They're rooted in historical exchanges and feelings and attitudes, antipathies even, but we hold on to them and we forget what that historical attitude might have been, but we still use them without much knowledge about why we're using them.
With Dutch, you know, if you go back to Grosse's Dictionary of the Vulgar Tongue, for example, in the 1700s, he's got a whole list of these Dutch phrases, some of them, a lot of them not used now, but we must still be coining them because something like a Dutch shout, presumably a remodeled Dutch treat, so we're still using that pattern.
We'll go Dutch, shall we?
Exactly, yes. In Dutch auction, where you start backwards, I think, don't you? You start at the top price, yes.
But when we say to each other, we'll go Dutch, won't we? We don't really know what we're saying, do we?
No.
We know what the meaning is, that we'll both share the cost of a meal or something.
Yes, and we don't realise the sort of ingrained xenophobia that's in these. I mean, it's no longer there, really, is it? Or look at Welsh. Welsh gets used very similarly to Dutch. One I use is the Welsh comb. So if you've forgotten your comb, an actual comb, then you can give your hair a Welsh comb.
Just with your fingers.
With your fingers, exactly. So, you know, a Welsh cricket is a louse. So it's used very much in the same way that Dutch is used, so but I suppose more vulgar. It's in that case.
I must say, in various BBC and English programmes on television, the Welsh still cop it a bit.
They do.
A bit of a joke, they're the figure of fun within a panel or something like that. They're still chucking off at the Welsh.
That's true, and one that I suppose people would still use and again not think about is Welsh rabbit, you know, which is neither Welsh nor is it rabbit, but so it's made out of cheese. It got remodelled to Welsh rarebit later, but it's a sort of a cheesy substitute.
Going right back to Julius Caesar by Shakespeare, That's how we got the phrase, isn't it? It's Greek to me, or we tend to say it's all Greek to me. Mm-hmm. Yes. Is that another example, or is that something slightly different?
No, I think that's exactly it. And other languages have similar expressions, but using other languages.
But we don't say, we haven't kept up, have we? We say it's all Greek to me, going right back to Shakespeare and Julius Caesar and other sources. I tell you what, I wouldn't like to try and decipher Mandarin Chinese, but we don't find ourselves saying, it's all Mandarin to me.
No, we don't. We probably wouldn't, because we tend to tiptoe around, don't we, these sorts of things now.
I guess this has been going on through European history. Syphilis is a great example, isn't it? Because then you see all the different national language groups all throwing the blame to others.
That's right.
Is that well embedded in the history?
That's a very good example of a sort of linguistic tit for tat. They didn't know the cause of syphilis, but they certainly knew its sort of sexual, or its links with sexual conduct. And of course, it's a long practice.
It was the French, it was the Italians, it was the Germans. Yes.
Wasn't
not
us. No, it's those foreigners that bring in, you know, vice and immorality. That's exactly right. So, I think the French blamed it on the Italians, and they called it the malady of Naples, and then the Italians blamed it on the French, so it was the French malady. And the English, of course, as I think I mentioned earlier, blamed it on the French. It was the French pox or the French gout, or they also said the Neapolitan bone ache, so the Italians didn't get away with it. But then there were I think the Russians blamed the Poles, and the Poles blamed the Germans. It was the German disease. The Germans blamed I think they blamed the French as well. Yes, they did. They called it French bad blisters. And then what happened then? Who have we got left? I think, the Dutch called it the Spanish pox, you know, so whatever nation was on your hit list would appear in this expression.
Now, you mentioned French letters and that general association with sex. They do sex. We don't even think about it here in England. But I presume the French don't use the phrase French letters.
No. In fact, they call it English raincoat, which is perhaps more appropriate. I don't, because I've always found French letters a bit curious. I mean, if you look at etymologies or histories of this word, they'll say it has to do with letters and envelopes, but it should be a French envelope if you think about it, Peter. I think that letter there is the same let as in, the let ball in tennis. There was an old verb in English. We might have talked about this when we talked about contronyms, the verb that meant to hinder or prevent, because, of course, what does French letter mean? The French letter does. It either stops disease or, you know, hinders the path of whatever, conception.
The French, in their very Gallic way, talk about the English raincoat.
Yes, that's right, yes.
Is this going on? Are we still coining new phrases like this every day, or are we just relying on the good old standards?
I think we're relying on the good old standards, and some are dropping them as well, I think, because of our squeamishness about, you know, derogatory expressions about other races.
Kate, we call it linguistic xenophobia, but it really does edge into racism in many ways, doesn't it? It's a layer below overt racism. Mm. So is this a linguistic thing, or is this essentially, quintessentially, a social thing?
It's a social thing, that's right, yes. And it's now, you know, IST languages, my colleague Keith Allen calls it, you know, racist, sexist language. They're now the big taboos. So I don't think you'll be getting too many of these expressions being created now.
Do you think it's still acceptable to say things like, pardon my French? Is that out there in the general social world and linguistically, is it still widespread? And is it more a spoken thing than a written thing?
Yes, these tend to be more part of speech, don't they? You wouldn't write them so much, but I think with something like that, I think that's probably going to linger. I keep hearing it anyway, do you?
I keep hearing it, Kate, but from a certain demographic, if you know what I mean. It's an older Australian.
Yes.
People who aren't as comfortable using the F-bomb or something like that, they'll say something a bit naughty or a bit cheeky and then cover it up and say, pardon my French.
That's, you're dead right. I mean, swearing is so common there. It's so much out in the public arena that you're not going to get people excusing themselves probably much anymore.
Great to see you and talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Peter.
Kate Burridge is Professor of Linguistics at Monash University here in Melbourne, Australia. I'm Peter Clark for Inside Language. Until next time.